Hey all, it's Devin. Upon re-listening to this episode, we realize that there is some talk of self-harm by Cliff in this issue, and we discuss it a bit. We don't linger on it a ton, but if this is a subject you're particularly sensitive to, you may want to skip this episode. And don't worry, from the looks of it, Arnold Drake and Bruno Premiani completely gave up on any sense of continuity with this story, so you're probably not going to miss too much. Anyway, on with the show. Hit it, Patrick Page and company. Hello, my name is Devin, and welcome to Meet Your Doom, a Doom Patrol podcast. Today, we're covering the backup two-parter from Doom Patrol 100 and 101, Robot Man Unchained, published in December 1965 and February 1966, written by Arnold Drake, penciled and inked by Bruno Premiani, lettered by Stan Starkman, and edited by Murray Boltonoff. Our story begins with a flashback to Cliff Steele driving his race car and thinking about how happy he is to be driving and have human feet and generally how perfect his life is and how much he enjoys being human. Naturally, his car hits an oil slick, tumbles over, and lights on fire. We find out that while Cliff's body was destroyed, his brain has been transferred into a robot body. Cliff, however, does not take this revelation kindly. He's horrified by his new voice, which apparently doesn't sound like a drunk cowboy, but I'm going to ignore that. He goes on a rampage, frightening the blonde nurse so much that her hair turns black, throwing things out of windows, and making quick work of the orderlies. Only once the chief throws a gas bomb at him is Cliff knocked out. The staff chains Cliff up on a bondage crucifix, then declares him an enemy of all mankind. The chief is convinced that the brain is the most fun part of the body, and therefore, Cliff should be happy that he still has that. If only he realizes that, he'll be ready to live again, and be less inclined to kill the person who did this to him, aka the chief. Cliff fakes contrition, only to beat up the two staff members who speak to him, and bounce out the door. Cliff then goes full King Kong, climbing a bridge just so planes can fly at him, and he can swat them with a girder. He also climbs a statue and throws off a globe it was holding. The mayor of the town has decided that Cliff has done well enough climbing, so the only solution is a tactical nuclear strike against Cliff as he's going about the city. Anyway, the chief manages to talk the mayor down by mentioning he did some shoddy wiring on Cliff's brain while attaching it to the new body. So the mayor decides to hold off on the nuclear strike, which is good news for Cliff, as well as the millions of people in the city. Or is it? Because Cliff is about to use his superpower. No, not falling apart, his other superpower, being a superconductor, to electrocute a whole baseball stadium of people. Sorry, but having seen how people react after sports games, I think I might be Team Cliff here. Sadly, the chief arrives and shoots some liquid rubber at Cliff so he can't conduct. Cliff runs away. Knowing all law enforcement is after him, he steals a trench coat and fedora, because this is a comic from the second half of the 20th century, so of course that's his disguise. Cliff tries to check into a hotel, but the cops, who are apparently in every building, start shooting at him after the elevator attendant thinks Cliff is too heavy for the elevator. Damn, fat shaming much? Cliff throws a piano and runs away. And then this story becomes a real story. In an alleyway, Cliff is recognized by two unhoused people, Poor Mary and Blind Mike. They know he's Robot Man, despite the fact that he won't even get that code name till a few issues after his first appearance. And then, to show him how trustworthy they are, Blind Mike shows he has a dagger in his cane and shoots a giant fly with it. Either convinced he can trust someone with a dagger cane, or worried he will end up like the fly, Cliff follows them to an abandoned subway station. There, they meet a hunchback Tibor and a little person, Manuel. The whole setup is strangely fancy, and also 19th century novel AF. Upset about either his body, his fugitive status, or the abrupt genre shift, Cliff throws a tantrum and bangs on some wood beams that were apparently holding up the place, Tiber pulls some giant metal girders out of somewhere, and he, Manuel, and Cliff fix the station and likely save a city block from caving in. Then Cliff has a headache. Ends up, he's hungry. The chief is no longer mentioning the wiring thing, so either he made that up, or he forgot, or it resolved itself, or the chief said wiring when he meant hungry, or vice versa. Regardless, he goes on the radio to announce a drop-off of special robot food for Cliff. The chief makes the drop to a man in a trench coat and fedora, only for the police to show up, surprising them both. However, once they catch the trench-coated fiend, they remove his hat and tinfoil to see it's Blind Mike. The vagrants give Cliff his food, having successfully fooled the police, and Cliff then walks away to angst in a trench coat, aka getting his Ben Grimm on. The end. And now joining us is my husband, Brian. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Devin.
How are you?
I am a robot. How are you?
I'm good. My brain is very tired because I pretty much worked all of today and only had one day for the weekend because yay tutoring.
You're living for the weekend?
Oh, God, I wish I was living for the weekend.
Mm-hmm. Is it living or working for the weekend?
Working for the weekend.
But also you're alive.
And my brain has food.
True.
Which is good.
Food is very important, especially for brains in a robot body.
Exactly. Okay, so wow, this story.
Yeah, this two-part cliffhanger of a story.
Cliffhanger? Because he does hang off a lot of things.
He does, and he tries to commit suicide.
A lot.
Yeah, I get it, because he was basically dead, and without any consideration for his DNR, and this is like well beyond just a do not resuscitate, he gets transplanted. Ugh, let's talk about it.
Okay, before we even go into that, because I have other thoughts on that, I just want to kind of give like a global view of this story. One, this story felt like Arnold Drake and Bruno Premiani would work on a page and then completely get drunk beyond imagination, have a vague scribble down of what was happening on the prior page, and then write the next page. Like, it really had this feeling of, like, not only is it just, like, pissing on the first issue continuity, but it seems to be pissing on its own intra-story continuity.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of weirdness going on there. Yeah, no, like, the flow of the story is very strange. And yeah, there's like playing off of that. I noticed that in the second story, when he wakes up, he's talking to this like blonde bombshell of a nurse. Mm-hmm. And then he scares her so much that her hair is now black. Wow.
Let me see that. Hold on. Oh my God, you are right.
So surprised.
Yeah.
That's a pretty bad mistake, because I don't understand why they needed to do his backstory this way. Is everyone going to get a two-parter backstory?
Okay, so here's the weird thing. This is another weird X-Men similarity.
Oh.
That there is a point, and it's a little later in X-Men, so this would definitely be an X-Men copied this.
Mm-hmm.
But X-Men does have, in the later part of its Silver Age run, multiple issues would have multi-part backstories of, like, how Cyclops joined the team, how Iceman joined the team, how Beast joined the team, how Angel joined the team.
Mm-hmm.
And so it might be doing this, but this backstory doesn't align with anything we know of Cliff.
It does align with him getting into an accident, right?
Okay, it aligns with that, but there's a lot of things that don't connect. One is he had no recognition of who the chief was when he meets him in the first issue.
True.
And I was expecting it to do something like what happens at the end of the Star Wars prequels, where essentially, like, C-3PO's memory gets wiped and there was going to be something with Cliff's brain that he wouldn't remember it.
Well, we don't know what happened to him in the interim, so there could be some brain damage as he's wandering around in his trench coat.
There could be that, but then the other thing is Cliff has become a fugitive from the law by the end of this story. And we know in the first story, my favorite panel of our very first episode, mm-hmm. was him competitively skiing as Robot Man.
Yeah. I guess it is a cliffhanger as well. How is he going to get re-acclimated and re-approved into society?
And how is he going to forget the code name Robot Man, which he's called multiple times in this story, and start going by Automaton?
Yeah. I'm guessing he had a skiing accident. Yeah.
See a episode description for last episode where we bring up that Brian have apparently has a solution to every plot hole.
I just want things to work nicely. It's my job.
And I like to point out the flaws in things. It's my job.
Yeah. Okay, so should we discuss I guess, linearly the story, or do we want to just kind of jump around?
I know, I can definitely discuss it linearly.
The first part was just 8 pages at the end of issue 100, and boy, did those go fast. Insanely. I love the splash panel, which I'm just like, okay, that's fine. We know he's going to go crazy.
My note was just, I am here for King Kong Cliff.
Yeah, which at least he calls out in the second issue that he is King Konging it. But I really love his little driving. And he's just like, I'm so excited to be a human. Drive, drive, drive. Oh, no. Oil. And then he dies.
Which I was wondering, was him slipping on oil in their first adventure with Beast Boy very triggering for him?
Maybe it was.
Maybe that's more of why he hates Beast Boy so much, is Beast Boy didn't help protect him from the banana oil.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, Beast Boy was being a Beast Boy. Yeah, and we kind of touched on this already, just the, like, insanity of saving him this way.
Okay, I actually had a very different reading. My note was Cliff saying they can't make me to a medical procedure that saved his life. That's very 2021.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I guess. I mean, he didn't take horse dewormer, so it's at least 2020, maybe. But yeah, no, it's a little extreme. And I guess this, maybe it's like, well, we might as well just try it out because otherwise he's dead. Is that how medical studies work?
Yeah, okay, that was my other note was, so the chief, there are multiple issues about how he's a recluse.
Mm-hmm.
And how the world thinks he's dead, because that's part of his whole cover story to how to escape General Immortus. There was that whole thing where Rita was having the cigarette lighter, and that was in turn, like, exposing the chief. And then he shows up at a hospital, and he apparently just has the clout to do experimental surgery. So I was wondering,
like, where is this hospital? Also, like, is this a real hospital?
I mean, I was assuming it was a real hospital, or it's a porn hospital, and I'm going to get into that in a second. But I was just wondering, like, is the chief both a recluse and famous? And how did the doctors know about him? Or can you just show up somewhere and be like, I'm both a medical genius and an electronic genius? And the whole staff is like, well, whatever, this guy's going to die anyway. Have fun.
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, he's very, very known in this.
Yeah, this is a mess, but it's a lot of fun.
Oh, no, it's definitely fun.
Yeah. So, can you talk about the porn?
Okay, this is just purely from the fact that at one point he calls one of the doctors Dr. Kill Patient.
Mm.
And all I can think of is Dr. Top and Bottom.
Yeah.
Or Dr. Fingerfuck.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know why, but I just now associate with, like, doctors with weird compound word last names just seem pornish.
Yeah, but I think I don't think his name is really actually Kill Doctor. When does he say this?
When Cliff is sliding down the hallway in, I think, like, the, not a gurney. He's saying, out of my way, Dr. Kill Patient. I'm busting out of this freak factory. Whee!
Oh, sorry. I thought that you were saying that, like, that was the chief calling him a kill patient. I was like, that's strange. Cliff does have some good jabs in here.
Oh, he has great jabs in here. But before any of that, I want to talk about Cliff's voice. Because I clearly have been doing Cliff's voice differently from how it's intended. But then how it's intended doesn't make sense in the latter part of this story.
Yeah, where he kind of, like, yeah, he can talk to those blind people and they think that he's human, basically.
Yeah, or where he can pass as human at the hotel. But yeah, we hear from him. And I'm just going to keep my Cliff voice.
I'm going to say, before you say that, as I am fixing plot holes left and right, that maybe it was like when you wake up in the morning and you haven't, like, had a drink of water yet and your voice is a little scratchy. Maybe his loudspeaker was coming online.
Maybe. So he describes it as, that sound, that's not my voice. It's like a broken loudspeaker playing a kazoo solo. So, okay, my thinking is, as I was trying to imagine that, you want to know the only thing I could imagine?
Oh, yeah.
The teachers from Peanuts. Wah, 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 wah.
All right, yeah. So again, we have the discomfort also with the chief's wheelchair and what the comic says about people in wheelchairs.
Mm.
It's like, who are you? No legs? Another patsy? Or a victim?
Yeah, I think actually that didn't bother me as much, and so I'm going to play Brian now, is because Cliff is being a raging asshole in this whole scene. He almost, like, sexually assaults the nurse, which is not cool. And I also then started to wonder how much action Cliff could get beforehand because he says, you call this living? Okay, sweetie. How about a date tonight? How'd you like to kiss these iron lips? How'd you like to marry me? Ha! I'm like, dude, ew.
Yeah, I read that. It was gross, but it was also kind of like, she was saying, oh, it's a miracle, you're alive, and we saved you, and everything. And he would just, as we see multiple times in this story, he would rather just be dead, because he's not happy in this body.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing is, Cliff never bothers to just be like, oh, can you just have killed me right now? His immediate response is destruction, destruction, destruction.
You know why?
Why?
Because he's hangry.
We will get to that. I will say the third thing, not only is he super creepy to women and making weird ableist comments, he's really mean to Boris Karloff.
He is. Boris Karloff is a saint.
Yeah, Boris Karloff literally is one of the reason that the Screen Actors Guild exists, to make sure that actors have proper union protection.
True. Unlike the protection these doctors have with him.
Oh, yeah. Now, and I will get to that in a second. But multiple times he says stuff like, I want to see that doctor fix it. This guy who makes Boris Karloff look like Haley Mills. Drag him out or I'll blast him out. And he has another comment in the next part, which is, and this ties into, of course, our good grief of the issue. Good grief. Who's that? Boris Karloff's ugly brother?
Oh, good grief.
Boris Karloff isn't actually that ugly. Nobody in this world seems to be able to distinguish Boris Karloff, the British actor, from Frankenstein's monster, which he is playing with copious amounts of stage makeup on.
Yeah. I don't know what to say to that. You're right.
Okay, so let's actually talk about the two orderlies that get beaten up by Cliff. The two muscle boys.
Oh, those boys.
So we're calling them muscle boys because literally they say, don't worry, nurse, two of us muscle boys can handle that noisy tin can in there. And that is easily my favorite part of this whole story because it is a really good bit of humor, actually, of those two panels. You just see them running in to stop Cliff. And the next panel is the straitjacket that they were coming in with is tied around both of their necks together and they're being thrown out of the wall. And you just get to imagine the whole fight. That's actually, I think, really good, funny storytelling and really good comedic timing in this issue.
Yeah, no, that is very good.
Yeah.
No, I really appreciated that kind of like 1-2 punchline kind of situation there.
The two, he gives the one-armed hug.
I thought that was also very porny too. Just their faces and Cliff's face.
Cliff's face isn't porty. Cliff's face is just major evil eyebrows with, like, a happy monkey seeing a banana smile.
Yeah, but I think that's, like, the beginning. Like, he's a bad porn actor. Yeah, because before that, you have him, like, kind of strung up there in his little arm restraints. He's like, oh, I'm tired. Come here, boys. And then faking it. Is that what you mean, Doc? Well, you're right. And now you're gonna open the other locks before I crack you like a pair of walnuts. Urgh. Okay, gasp. I'll do it. Yeah, I don't have much more to say about that, but I do want to say how quickly Cliff learns to control his body also, and then how he can weirdly kangaroo, like Tigger, hop through the gate.
Yeah, he clearly learns a lot about his body very quickly, but that's not the only thing that seems to happen very quickly, which is that almost immediately he is now declared the enemy of all mankind by page 4, so before he even kangaroos out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was weird.
It definitely had a Frankenstein, like the novel, not the movie type feeling, where the second they seem to have seen Cliff and seen him moving around a little bit, they almost seem repulsed by him regardless of his actions, like he's being an asshole, but they go from, oh, there's a brain in a robot body and it's not acting 100% the way we want to. It is the enemy of all mankind.
Yeah, it's very much overreacting and not understanding the trauma that he went through.
Yeah.
Having been at the high point of his life driving a car and then waking up in a robot body, they should probably respect that. And they could have handled this whole situation a smidge better.
Why didn't they just try putting him in a car again, being like, hey, you can still drive a car? He might have been in a pretty good mood after that.
What I would have suggested is that they woke him up with his limbs not turned on, so then they just like restraining him in bed so that they can like talk to him and be like, hello, you're a robot. Not just having some hot blonde say, hello, it's a miracle, you're alive. And he's like, I'm alive. Oh no, robot. Ah.
That seems, for how much you are horrified with how they treated Cliff, I feel like waking someone up and depriving them of any movement is...
Well, I think it's like, I mean, they do that with people when, like, if you need to, like, restrain them from hurting themselves or they've had, like, a traumatic head injury, you can be restrained so that you don't injure yourself more. And they say, like, hey, you have someone explain the situation when they wake up and in the safest way possible. And they're not doing that here. They're basically saying, rise and shine, sweetums, be on your way. And then he freaks out.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so Enemy of Mankind, who at this point is just, like, on a bridge, somehow gets a girder.
Yeah, all Cliff seems to want to do for destruction for the first parts of his rampage is just climb on things.
Climb on things and attack the police. Fine.
Yeah, I'm fine with both of those. I mean, I really don't think that we had a plan initially aside from climb on things.
Yeah, no, I think because he's panicking.
Everyone likes a good climb.
True. You get a nice perspective on the situation.
Yeah.
His world is turned upside down as he does with Atlas when he's throwing the globe out of the statue at the police. Yee! Look out for flying chestnuts. Love nut references in here. Oh, it's because he's been neutered.
No.
Poor guy. But what my next comment with that is, okay, so you have an angry robot, and your response is while he's in the middle of a city, you want to use tactical nuclear bombs.
Oh my god. I know. That was such a weird thing. With, like, I'm usually used to that story trope not coming from the mayor of the town.
Yeah, I think it's just the mayor did not understand how nuclear bombs work. And he's like, a tactical nuclear bomb is just a weird tiny explosion that might be able to take his arms off.
I mean, maybe this is where the chief got his understanding of how radiation works from.
Oh, it's a little baby bomb.
Oh, yeah.
It's the baby bomb. It's the fetal bomb. Anyway.
I was just trying to think of a joke to make there to make it clear that a fetal bomb is not yet a baby bomb. And you can disarm and dismantle a fetal bomb without feeling there's any ethical issues that you would have before dismantling a baby bomb. Because ultimately, it is the bomb maker's choice.
I wouldn't be too sad about dismantling a baby nuclear bomb also.
Okay, yeah. I think the thing is, once you start comparing babies to nuclear bombs, the comparison is going to get very weird very quickly.
True.
That's the moral of this story.
Don't nuclearize your babies.
Oh my god, I'm also just thinking of how much you're saying nuclear right now.
Nuclear.
I love you. So during the conversation with the mayor, who I don't think we give him a name, so I'm just going to call him Mayor Eric Garcetti, because that seems about the level of skill this guy has. Here is where we get a plot point introduced in this issue that gets completely thrown out by the next one, which is the chief saying, Cliff Steele never committed a criminal act in his life. So this insanity must be due to an error I made during the brain operation. I'm responsible for his madness, and I alone know enough about his metal body to stop him. You've got to give me a chance to do it. And then by the next issue that finishes the story, it just was like, oh wait, Cliff was hangry, but I don't even know if the hangry is really the explanation here.
Yeah, I think maybe once the chief heard him talking about setting off a nuclear bomb in the city, he was just like, okay, this guy's an idiot. So I need to not overcomplicate this, but this is a traumatized person who's freaking out because he was almost dead and I resurrected him and he's freaking out. So let me just take some blame that I'm not responsible for because I'm perfect and he's just hungry because he's still alive and la 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 la.
Okay, fine. I will go with the idea because that would make more sense than the fact that I am shocked that the chief has some form of introspection and humility that he has never had before. So much so that I thought if you look at that third panel, it looks like he's getting high off of humility.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, this is a drug he hasn't had before. It's freaking him the fuck out, and he will just abstain from it for the rest of his life afterward.
Humility is not a good look for him.
Yeah. Can I just read a line at the baseball game that really bothered me?
Yeah.
Come on, lefty, you bum. Get a hit. Your batting average is lower than your IQ these days. You idiot. Every batting average is lower than an IQ. A batting average is a decimal between 0 and 1.
Yeah, but they call it, like you said, an 800.
But it is actually a 0.800. So just looking at that line, I was like, yeah, no matter how good you are, even a perfect player's batting average, unless they were very, 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 very bad at an IQ test, test and they scored an IQ of 1 and they were very good at batting and they had a batting average of 1, then their batting average would indeed be equal to their IQ, but otherwise their batting average will always be lower than their IQ.
Maybe.
You broke me, Brian.
What am I going to say here?
You broke me. So my only note for the rest of this first part of the story is that it really does confirm that Cliff's number one power is conducting.
Yeah, he's just one big metal conductor.
Yeah.
I guess he would not just electrocute the people by running electricity through a giant metal stadium. He would just melt it. That was weird. A choice. Yeah. So yeah, so that cliffhanger happened.
With Cliff literally hanging off of a girder.
Was he hanging?
Yeah, he's like hanging like a monkey. So it's Cliff literally is hanging at the cliffhanger.
Yeah. Clever, clever boy. And now we get to 101. Cliff 101, if you will. The Lonely Giant.
Yeah, can we discuss the copy at the beginning of this story?
Sure.
The Lonely Giant, continuing the new pulse-pounding adventure series. The biggest thing since garlic-flavored toothpaste. The staggering saga of Cliff Seal, the human brain in a metal body before his madness was tamed by the Doom Patrol.
Yeah, it seemed like they didn't want to be writing this story.
Yeah, because, yeah, the biggest thing since garlic-flavored toothpaste. I did grow up in a heavily Italian town, so I'd be super into garlic-flavored toothpaste. I also don't like vampires, so that'd be another benefit.
Yeah, and I was just going to say, maybe the writers had just visited there, and they like the garlic-flavored ice cream, the garlic wine.
Yeah.
Toothpaste.
I'm sure there has been garlic-flavored toothpaste at some point in Gilroy, and I'm sure it was great. Bruno Permiani was Italian, and we know that he hated fascists, so we can only assume he also hated vampires, since they're, like, pretty horrible as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe this wasn't actually supposed to be a bad thing. Maybe they're like, oh man, garlic flavored toothpaste. That would be awesome. But I guess this would be the second best thing would be continuing this story.
True.
But then also the Doom Patrol didn't tame his madness. He was again pretty chill by that.
Yeah, true. I mean, I guess he's like, he's been fairly grumpy.
He's been grumpy, but the first time they meet him, he's willing to risk his life to stop a bomb.
True. Yeah. This just feels like a ghost story that they're telling Beast Boy. To try to, like, scare him away?
Or to get him, like, stop pissing off Cliff.
Oh, yeah.
He will climb on something. Mm-hmm. And you don't want Cliff climbing on something.
No. Climbing is bad.
Or maybe, like, he kept turning into a gorilla, and they're like, well, Cliff will steal your shtick.
Cliff is the original gorilla in this team.
Well, maybe it was also maybe trying to get Beast Boy to bond with Cliff over that?
Maybe.
Like, he can be a rebel, too, who likes climbing on stuff?
Yeah. Possibly. Those are potentialities. Yeah, so they resolve this melting of the stadium pretty quickly with the rubber spray, which you would think that they would also just spray him with something that would just stop him rather than just, like, letting him continue the story.
Yeah, I did wonder, did the chief have that for that particular night, or is that just something the chief carries around every day hoping to have a use for it?
I mean, continuing with the porn thing, it does kind of feel like they were trying to, like, put him in, like, a gimp suit.
Or does it kind of, like, wax play?
Ooh, yeah, that too.
Yeah.
I do love a helicopter with those kind of wheels. In the, like, hovering over him.
Oh, yeah. This story is beautifully drawn. Like, Bruno Permiani is doing some A-plus stuff here.
Yeah, there's really, really good stuff in this part of the story.
Yeah.
Even better stuff. Then, oh my god, I loved the stealing of the trench coat.
And fedora.
Yes, and the power of this trench coat and fedora, which didn't, like, make him look like anyone else. It just completely blacked out his face and body.
Okay, so you listened to essentially all of Teen Titan Wasteland, but you haven't listened to a ton of Titan Up the Defense just because you don't want the end of Doom Patrol spoiled, correct?
Correct.
Okay, that is a running thing in Titan Up the Defense, is a trench coat and fedora is the universal disguise. And throughout comics, if you need to disguise, that is what you wear.
Yeah, but I see it as a disguise because it, like, puts darkness over you. Is that how it works?
I think that's the idea behind it, but it doesn't make sense. Like, the character I always think of who disguises himself as that is the Thing from Fantastic Four.
Mm-hmm.
And the Thing from Fantastic Four is a, like, probably, like, half ton at least, 7 foot tall, 4 feet wide, man made of rocks.
Yeah, so he has to get a pretty big trench coat.
Yeah, but, like, once he puts it on, nobody cares. They're like, okay, I guess that's just a normal man. Or like, there's a story that Hub will always reference from the 70s Marvel Godzilla comic where Godzilla gets shrunk down to 7 feet tall, puts on a trench coat and fedora, and nobody can tell that's Godzilla anymore. It is the universal disguise.
Yeah. I think it was just the like complete lack of facial features that kind of threw me off.
Oh yeah, no, the thing is like, once you have the fedora, the trench coat casts darkness up, the fedora casts darkness down, and you just have pure darkness around your face no matter where you are.
True, yeah. Although there are some great shots of his leg, especially when he's throwing the piano down. He is like, was it Beyonce who did like the really big slit on her dress to reveal her leg? It was some famous...
Beyonce, I think, has done at some point. I'm thinking, are you thinking of J-Lo?
Was it J-Lo who did it at the Oscars?
Yes, in that green dress.
Maybe, yeah.
I mean, it's been done a few different times. I'm also like Jessica Rabbit.
True, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's just like that stance and throwing down the piano at the same time was pretty great. Which I love after he's in the elevator and the guy's like, oh no, you're too heavy. You must be the robot. He then yells at the police for, as I quote, stop the bang bangs. It's bad manners to interrupt a concert. And you know what he does next? He throws the freaking piano at them. I feel like the bang bangs were less disruptive to the concert than throwing Piano Man's piano down the set of stairs.
Okay, so I'm going to pull up Brian, and I'm going to say that Cliff is a purist, and he either needs a perfect uninterrupted concert or no concert at all.
Okay, yeah.
And I think that's how he views his life. He either wants his perfect, intact human body or no life at all. And so there's symbolism there, Brian.
There is symbolism. But it's also probably not the best idea to put a piano right at the top of a staircase.
Yeah, I think we're overlooking a few of the other weird parts of this one page. Which, if it means this page look very Curious George storybook.
Yeah, all the yellows and oranges and greens.
Yeah, it's a lot of primary colors, or like at least very simple colors. And even like the posture of the police feel very storybookish, but... I like that there are three policemen in this hotel, which there was no indication that Cliff was at this hotel before, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So were there just three or more policemen in every single building in the city?
Oh my God, these are not policemen. There's a bachelorette party.
And so they have now just pressed all the...
No, no, it's not even that. It's just that, like, maybe it is that. I don't know. They have guns.
Okay, so I like the idea that either A, they pressed these poor male strippers into service as policemen to find, as and I quote, that crazy robot person. Or that all the male strippers just heard this was going on and they're like, you know what? Let's make our strip act, that's not what it's called. What is it called? A strip show?
A strip tease?
No, a strip tease means you don't fully strip.
Oh.
Because you're teasing it, but you might not fully do it.
I mean, I think a lot of places you're not allowed to do, like, full nudity.
I think at a bachelorette party, if you want to, you can.
Yeah, but I feel like at a bachelorette party, the girls are like, that's too scandalous.
So, anyway, I wonder if all the male strippers heard about this, like...
Sorry. That was just like Aunt Agatha was at the bachelorette party. And all like the like 19 to 24, 34 year old were going to like see some nice stripper dick. And Aunt Agatha was just like, as soon as he takes his shirt off and he's not even pantsless yet, she's like, oh, blessed me. This is too much.
He took his shirt off, but he actually still has his t-shirt underneath. And it's like how one point, everyone told you the time I was cooking with my Aunt Patty, preparing Thanksgiving, and I was wearing like a t-shirt, like, you know, like a t-shirt one would wear in the summer, like graphic tee, some type of image on it. And I had a sweater over that, and it was getting warm, so I took off the sweater, and my aunt said to me, it's okay if you want to work in your underwear. And I think she was referring to my t-shirt as my underwear.
Yeah. She was just thinking it was like, I said, so your shirt sleeves, is that what they call it when you take off like your coat? That's just your long, like, button down, like, right? Like, when when Victorian businessmen were like, it's a little bit hot in here. I'm also German. Whenever I go old, I just go German. I'm Brian von Old Man.
Yeah, all of this to say, I wonder, were they doing a timely strip tease act show? And why do we keep inviting Aunt Agatha to bachelorette parties? She clearly can't handle it, not in her condition.
No, but if she doesn't get invited, you're out of the will, and she's a fucking trillionaire.
I haven't even gotten to the other weird part of this page, which is the fact that the fucking piano player is just playing his music as there's a literal gunfight going on next to him.
Yeah.
That is like some violinist on the Titanic level dedication.
I mean, just like Cliff dying in that car, that piano player wanted to die doing what he loved, performing at the top of a staircase.
And not apparently being listened to by anyone.
No. I guess it's like, so there's like this fancy department store in my mall in my hometown, Von Maur, where they had a piano there, and occasionally they would have like a live piano player playing, which I know is not that impressive.
That's pretty impressive for a department store, I will say.
Okay. But yeah, these people like come in like fancy suits and or like long dresses with pearls and play their little songs in the Von Maur. And it also had the nice bathrooms.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. If we go back, we shall pee by the piano.
Wait, you... Okay, no, wait.
What?
You dragged me to Indiana.
Yeah.
And you didn't take me to the fancy department store?
I forgot to.
We went to a JCPenney instead.
Well, that was for family photos.
Anyway.
Da-da-da-da-da-da. Ding!
So remember how I said there was a second X-Men parallel?
I do.
Here's the other one, and it's not actually an X-Men parallel, but I think X-Men was ghosting on me so much, in Silver Age X-Men in particular, that I thought it was going to be. So, in X-Men 24, the X-Men fight this guy, Locust, who is very similar to the Bugman that we dealt with a few issues ago.
Yeah.
And there's a part where Professor X dresses up as an 18th century hermit to tell him, hey, all you need is a friend, I will be your friend.
Oh, yeah.
And I think between the Frankenstein aspect of this, and that this almost like perfectly lines up with issue 24 of Doom Patrol, and just the general weirdness that this story takes toward the end, my brain was trying to make it make sense, almost like in like, I'm in a weird dream, let me try to make sense of this.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, the chief is clearly dressed up as one of these people, because how else would they know that he's Robot Man, and they're going to say he needs a friend, and that is very similar to what happens with Locust. But yeah, no, that is not what happened at all. I don't know how they know he's Robot Man.
Well, I guess maybe they've heard about it in the news, and because he says, like, gotta keep going, gotta stay free, so I can get the Fink surgeon who, and then they're like, we'll help you, Robot Man.
But he's wearing his trench coat and fedora.
They're blind, and they can't tell that anyway. Aren't both of them blind?
No, I think...
Old Mary's blind, too. Help the needy. Buy a pencil from poor Mary. Oh.
No, yeah, she's poor, and he's blind.
Maybe she has poor eyesight.
Which implies that if she's poor and he's blind...
Yeah.
That implies he actually is pretty rich. Or at least middle class.
Who, Mike?
Yeah.
I think, like, as we have Robot Man, Rita... and Larry, who are all freaks, like, that the chief's freakishness is that he's in a wheelchair. Her freakishness is just that she's poor.
But at least the thing is, none of the other characters are in a wheelchair. And yes, being in a wheelchair is in no way freakish and definitely not comparable to, like, having a sentient radioactive being in you or being in a robot body.
Yeah.
The chief can at least say, I'm in a wheelchair, none of you are. But I would assume then this means Mary has to be able to say, unlike the rest of you, I'm poor.
I mean, I don't know why you think he's rich when they're all living in an abandoned subway tunnel.
I think they have to be rich or at least middle class. It's just because otherwise it would be really weird for her to be poor Mary. Because if it's blind Mike and poor Mary, it's implying that Mary isn't blind and Mike isn't poor.
I just think that Mary is just slumming it.
So, Mary is actually the one person who isn't poor.
I think she's lower middle class, and she made some poor decisions.
Maybe she's poor in friends, unlike the rest of them. Maybe they all secretly hate her.
Yeah.
I mean, though they do have, like, a nice place, and Cliff kind of even comments on it.
Well, he is surprised that they've made it look nice. It's not that nice. It's still an abandoned subway station.
Yeah, it's an abandoned subway station, but it has, like, some really nice, like, glassware and tableware.
Well, yeah, I think it's because Manuel has stolen it, because he's very limber.
Yeah, no, he's limber. Maybe he stole it from Mary, and that's why she's poor.
Oh, maybe. And she's just like, well... I'm quite attached to this glassware. I might as well just move into the underground subway tunnel.
Also, why doesn't Manuel have a thing for his name? Yeah, neither does Tybor. So we have poor Mary, blind Mike, and then just Tybor and Manuel. I'm upset with the naming of these people.
I think, as we said, every page in this story is inconsistent with the rest of itself.
Yeah. I mean, I think by this point, even the panel got it inconsistent.
Yeah. So it's great that they're down there, I guess. But, sorry, he seems to just shit girders. Because after he destroys their subway house, they're suddenly, I guess, or maybe Tibor has them.
Oh, no, yeah, Tibor just runs in with them. Are we just going to gloss over the fact that Blind Mike is just running around with a cane that can shoot daggers?
I mean, I was going to talk about it, but you went straight to their fancy glassware, so.
Okay, let's talk about that.
Yeah, Blind Mike, just to prove that he is able to get around well, shoots a fly with a dart gun thing.
Okay, looking at that cane, which he was using as a cane.
Yeah.
And looking at the size of the hole in that cane.
Yeah.
And then looking at the size of the spear that comes out that would have to be in relation to that hole. That is a huge fucking fly.
Yeah, it's not even a horse fly. I think it's like an elephant fly.
That fly is like the size of a small hawk.
Yeah. Maybe that was... Yeah, I don't know what's going on here.
Yeah. This issue hurts my brain.
It does. There's just so much going on. And then we get... Cliff feeling bad about destroying their place, then he gets dizzy because he's hungry. Because I guess he hasn't been fed after his surgery. See, this could have been resolved if they tied him down, gave him some brain soup, explained the situation.
Yeah, I mean, what I actually was kind of shocked by is the fact that, like, Cliff throws a tantrum, destroys their house, and Tibor just runs in with the girders, and they just, like, kind of put up the girders. Manuel already seems to have some rope ready. They've clearly done this before. Is this just their hazing ritual for new friends? Like, ha, you destroyed the house, now feel guilty. And then, like, they were like, listen, we destroy this, like, every other Tuesday. It's a really good time.
Yeah, I think it's, like, it is a rundown place. It's just kind of falling apart. A few wham, wham, whams, and then the whole roof is caving in. Like, we all know that Cliff isn't that strong.
He's no Rita.
Yeah. I do like that panel of him holding up the beam.
Because it's, like, front and center crotch.
Yeah, but also just, like, super strong.
No, it is a good one, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Like, the rest of the story just kind of wraps up pretty quickly with just, like, he needs to eat, the chief gets... tricked by the police saying, oh, we're not gonna try to capture him, you can go feed him. And at least Cliff wasn't that dumb.
Yeah.
Do you have more to say about that?
I feel like you kind of got it. Like, yeah, just it totally gives up. It felt like the first issue was very much trying to hedge its things of, like, Cliff was really going to the point of acting like a character you'd be uncomfortable with being on a superhero team. Like, he almost commits mass murder.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, well, his brain isn't properly wired, blah, 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 blah. And I almost felt like Arnold Drake was giving himself the out, not only to exculpate Cliff, but give enough reasoning to be like, and then he got back, he got taken care of, he didn't remember any of this, so he doesn't remember the chief, and he was able to be reintegrated into society, so he could then be like the skiing robot before everything hits, and that would have actually closed the loop really nicely.
Yeah.
And then Arnold Drake is like, or maybe he was just hungry, and then we just get this giant continuity mess.
Yeah, it just seems like not well written. And potentially because he's like, why are we even doing this?
Why am I not just brushing with garlic toothpaste? Why am I wasting my time with this instead?
Yeah, why is this the choice of my life? Why am I not just making pasta sauce in my mouth while I'm brushing my teeth?
Oh my god, that sounds so good.
It does.
Should we get to awards?
Yes, might as well.
Okay, so who did you have as your best member?
That was difficult because... there was no team yet, so I was like, maybe it's the chief? And the chief, at least, I guess, saved a life, like Snow Patrol. But yeah, I mean, I guess I do appreciate Cliff's use of the trench coat and fedora. I'm just gonna have to give it to the chief, I guess, because he did save Cliff's life.
Yeah, I'm giving it to the chief for a few reasons. One, he tried out the drug of humility and self-reflection and both got super high off of it and then decided it wasn't for him and he needs a life clean of that.
That was a bad trip.
Yeah. Two, that he was trying to, like, essentially simplify things for Eric Garcetti when he was explaining things to him.
Mm-hmm.
And use that brain wiring excuse versus trying to explain the nature of trauma to someone who clearly wasn't going to understand it.
Yeah.
And three, he realized when a broga was hangry.
True.
Yeah, I think I'm giving it to Chief. And Cliff was just horrible. Cliff was absolutely horrible in this issue.
Yeah, Cliff was not that great. Granted, again, he did have a very traumatic experience.
He felt too anti-vaxxer to me.
He did, yeah. And, like, the fact that he, like, was brought into this other group of freaks and he's like, I don't have friends. Let me be alone.
Yeah. And he destroys their place.
He destroys their place, lets Blind Mike get arrested as himself, which I do like that panel of him peeling off the tinfoil.
Oh, yeah.
Which I don't know why that's necessary, because the fedora covered his face in darkness anyway. Yeah, that was strange. Anyway, what was your favorite nonsense?
Everything, which I feel like is becoming more and more a response, but if I had to get specific, I would say it is the, like, weirdly 19th century type peasant freaks he meets in the latter half, like, that is Tibor Emmanuel, Blind Mike, and Poor Mary. But if I were to get more specific, I'm going to go with Poor Mary, because the idea of her both immediately knowing that Cliff is Robot Man before he even has that code name, and just her name of Poor Mary is really confusing to me.
Yeah, she just wanted some sympathy.
Yeah, so I'm just going to say Poor Mary is my favorite bit of nonsense. There was a lot in this issue. How about you?
My favorite was Cliff and Piano Man. Was just, like, the whole situation with the Piano Man and his just, like, protection of the Piano Man and then his destruction of the piano. Which, that is, out of everything that happened in this story, it made the least sense to me.
That's fair. The nuclear strike was up there also.
That too.
Favorite panel?
There were so many good panels, but I really enjoyed the, I guess, like, the two-panel cross of Emmanuel jumping down with the wine and the kind of, like, fluid movement of him and the wispiness of his body moving and just, like, not spilling the wine was pretty great. It's just, like, the one that was the most dynamic. It's probably tied with, though, him stealing the Trenchcoat Man and singing the song, "This is the way we steal our clothes, steal our clothes, steal our clothes, ha, ha, ha."
Those are both pretty great. I had a lot that I was tempted to go with. Like, I love the opening splash page of King Kong Cliff. If I could cheat, I would say it was the two-part panel of the orderlies running in and then getting kicked out. If I were to go with one, I love the one of Cliff smashing the window. It's just great. It's an awesome perspective. But yeah, I mean, there are just so many good ones. And, like, this is definitely one of those issues where Premiani is just on top of his game the whole way through.
You know, that triptych of panels at the bottom is wonderful. Just the, like, his aggression with breaking the glass, stealing the mannequin, and putting it on and walking away, and just, like, the discards of the mannequin by the trash can. It's very much like he kind of is this non-animate figure that is being animated. A mannequin is, like, a fake life, and you're kind of imagining things with it, like, I could be this. And he steals that mannequin's identity, basically, and discards him as shrapnel that he is made of.
Yeah, no, I actually totally get what you mean, yeah, where it's, like, giving an interesting juxtaposition of the two. Yeah, I mean, Premiani in general just does a lot of great pairs or triptychs of panels, like, the whole hotel scene is great with that. Even I love the, as Cliff is rampaging, that four-panel sequence of the chief arguing with the mayor is fantastic. There's some, like, interesting use of, like, where panels are as insets, like when he throws the gas bomb at Cliff. Like, it is just, as little as this story made sense, it was a beautifully, beautifully drawn story.
It was, yeah. No, I really appreciated it. The drawing, not the story. The story could have been gone. What was your favorite line?
My favorite line was, "I'll be a pink and purple panda. How'd you do that, Poor Mary?" So when Blind Mike shoots the fly the size of a hawk, that is Cliff's response. "I'll be a pink and purple panda."
That is not what pandas look like, so I guess that is very spectacular.
Maybe he's trying to fool Mike, being like, well, you've never seen a panda. Maybe he's like, you haven't seen one in a while, so, like, pandas are all pink and purple now.
Maybe. And maybe he's like, Poor Mary, you've never been able to afford to go to a zoo. You don't know what pandas look like. The fact is, she actually owns the zoo. She has brought it with them into the subway because she's like, my zoo cannot be far from my China.
I was about to say, Mary just calls herself poor because she can't afford a panda. She's one of those people.
Yeah, the poor panda people. It's pandemonium.
Oh. Oh.
That was pretty good, right?
Anyway.
Anyway, my favorite line was, which I kind of already talked about, but I'm going to read it. Man. This is the life. Burning rubber under me. 200 horsepower at the touch of my toe. And just being free. Free! Ah! Oh, gosh. You never want to, like, be too positive when you're doing something risky, Cliff.
Yeah.
You're just asking for it. You are asking for it. And I might ask, is it outro time?
It's outro time.
Cool.
Meet Your Doom is recorded and produced in Inglewood, California.
You can check out new episodes every 3 Fridays on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you can find podcasts.
If you like our podcast, please review us and tell all your friends.
If you don't like our podcast, make sure you at least invite Aunt Agatha to your bachelorette party.
The old biddy is loaded.
You can follow us at Meet Your Doom Pod on Instagram or email us at meetyourdoompod@gmail.com.
Our theme song is a remix of Freak Like Me from the doomed Spider-Man musical.
Till next time, keep it doomy.